What's up, Monster Kids? You staying up way too late watching Bela Lugosi and Vincent Price on TV? Well, I've got the podcast for you. Cobwebs, a gothic cinema podcast in which I, Daniel Epler, and a rotating panel of guests dive into the history of the gothic horror genre and its influence on cinema today.
Now, before the party begins, let's go over the details.
I'm talking Hammer Horror, Universal Monsters, Edgar Allan Poe, and even the modern stuff that draws inspiration from those.
There are dark corners. Horror is almost impossible to imagine.
So if you've always felt you'd be a little more at home in a Transylvanian castle with the vampires in the crypt, then head to cobwebspodcast.com or check us out on major podcasting platforms. Cobwebs, a gothic cinema podcast guaranteed to give you the spooks.
Welcome to the final episode of Dead Ringers live from Fantastic Fest 2019. My name is Noel McBride. I'm happy to be joined by Paul Farrell and Emily Von Zela. Fortunately, it's been a long week and we lost someone, Kat, by which I mean she got sick. She's fine. She just was not able to attend anything on day 8. So it will just be the three of us closing out the festival. But it was a really good day. So let's get into it.
I didn't show up until one of the later screenings. Paul, you saw something in the morning. What was that?
I saw The Ship of Monsters from 1960.
Tell me more.
So this, this movie. So I saw a good amount of repertory stuff this year, which I'm really glad I did. I actually went to see this because of the word of mouth. This was one that like played early on in the festival. And one of the big things they talked about when it was introduced that morning was this was the only movie to show three different times.
Oh.
So it actually showed. It wasn't actually planned on being screened that final day, but the word of mouth was so popular that they brought it back.
That's cool.
Because it's a harder movie to see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was like, that's really neat. And it worked because that's why I went to see it, because I had heard lots of people talking about it. And it's just like one of the, I mean, it's the reason I love genre cinema, like the boundless creativity it's capable of. So this is a movie that I think in my eyes was sort of born out of something a little bit more cynical and then grew into something really wonderful, meaning like the producer supposedly put this movie together by looking at what was popular at the box office and genre cinema at the time and taking all of the main components from those types of movies and cramming it into one movie. So it deals with aliens, monsters, cowboys. There's like a musical sequence in it. There's a snarky robot that hangs out. Like it is just, it's like every thing from that kind of science fiction action adventure genre movie from that time, but it has a almost a comic perspective, where not that it's making fun of itself or that it's a parody, but it's just having fun all the time, and that's embodied with its sort of the closest thing it gets to a protagonist, which is this jovial, tall tale telling singing cowboy who lives in Mexico. And basically, the movie is about classic trope. Two sort of beautiful women from Venus, from the planet Venus, who are searching the galaxy for male specimens to repopulate their planet. And they've collected together like all these different male aliens, like these monstrous aliens from around the galaxy, because that's like the best of each race that they find. And then they finally sort of check out Earth, and where they land is in Mexico, and they meet this cowboy. And from that moment, there's sort of like this just childlike joy to the movie. it feels really genuine in its celebration of genre. And it's just a lot of fun. So, you know, if any of this stuff strikes your fancy, I think Ship of Monsters is going to be a good time for you. I think it's definitely worth seeking out.
I really regret not seeing this movie because it sounds like 20 different kinds of magical.
It is. It really, really is. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it. It's just inexhaustibly creative, and I love it.
Yeah, like everybody that came out of it seemed super joyful, and like it just seems kind of particularly knowing for a movie of that era of like doing a kitchen sink approach, but I don't know, finding some. Well, again, maybe it was born cynically, so maybe they stumbled into like the sweet parts, but at least they did, I guess. So
yeah, however it came together in the end, it worked out.
That's good. And then the next thing we saw on day 8 would have been a big premiere, which was Parasite from Bong Joon-ho. And yeah, that was like I didn't really know what to expect of that going in, other than Adrian Torres sort of warning that not to expect a huge twist. Like what it is what it appears to be sort of early on is mostly what it is, which I think was actually helpful for me because some of his movies can take such big twists that I think a lot of people were expecting it to go in much weirder directions, even though it's already pretty damn weird. What did you guys think of it?
I loved it. I also knew nothing about it. I hadn't watched any of the trailers beforehand, so I just knew that it was, you know, different from his other films, and it was a little more, I guess, grounded, even though I question that terminology because it's not terribly grounded.
Yeah.
But it's not like a monster movie.
Yeah, like it's not a genre movie, even though it still feels like a horror movie more, or like a thriller more than anything else, but the way it's staged and like, yeah, like you're saying, the way it's sort of grounded in reality makes it feel like a unique sort of beast.
Yeah, because to me, so similar to you, Emily, like I knew nothing about this movie going into it, which was probably a really one of the better ways to see it. I am glad I knew it wasn't like genre, because at first I thought it was, you know, name like Parasite, you don't know anything about it. Coming from this director, you're like, oh, okay, this is going to be some weird disease movie or something.
Or bugs of some kind.
And the trailer definitely sells some kind of thing. Like, yeah. I did see the trailer at a draft house, and like it did seem like it was going to be more genre. So I'm glad I had that sort of recalibrated before going in.
But what I liked about it was, you know, because it definitely does go to some weird genre places.
Yeah.
But the first like hour of the movie played more like a fun kind of like almost like a heist movie, you know.
Yeah, like, it kind of like had like a caper vibe.
Yeah, it did. It really felt like sort of a Ocean's 11-y, like, okay, we're gonna do this, and then this is stage two, because they're sort of what the characters are doing, it's a bit ahead of where the audience is. Like, you kind of figure out their plan as they execute it. And it's really fun to watch, and it's hilarious. I mean, it's really funny, like laugh out loud funny, which again, I wasn't expecting. And all of the characters are really likable. So you get on their side really early on, and it's such a smart way to do it because this is a movie about the disparity between the rich and the poor. And that's such a heavy concept that it would have been really easy to bog it down a little bit with the social, even if they're being satirical, it could have felt heavier. And I think it was smart to keep it light. So that way, when you get to the heavy stuff, you know, you're more endeared to the characters and the world that they've kind of built for you, that the heavy stuff lands better.
Yeah.
No, and it's, again, like all of these movies, it's a really hard movie to talk about because I really don't want to spoil most anything that happens in the latter half of the film.
Yeah.
But where it goes is really interesting, and I think it's one of the best movies to bring that disparity of wealth to the forefront in a clear sort of metaphor within the plot that really, really resonates. And I just thought was incredibly successful.
Yeah. And sort of like you were saying, Paul, you know, I expected, again, I prior to this, I think I guess I'd only seen two of his movies, which are Snowpiercer, which I love, and then The Host, which I just watched this year and also liked a lot. The thing with genre and what I love about genre is, you know, like you were sort of referring to, like, it helps the more difficult issues go down easy. It's for people who love our candy, but we also want to still deal with serious things. So we still want the gore.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, the fact that he then avoids genre, like, most people that do that then do this type of story, like you said, it gets too dark or too sort of, like, hard to watch. But this leans so far into the comedy and, like, the absurdity of it that, like, it's just a total blast. And so, like, really coming out of it, I feel like if I'm going to describe it as anything, it's like a comedy. I mean, a satire, but, you know, a satirical comedy. But, like, I don't know. Like, there's a couple moments where it does get serious, but, like, I just couldn't believe how overwhelmingly funny it was all the way throughout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and yeah, agreed. It's very hard to talk about without spoiling.
But I think it's out in a couple weeks, so everyone won't have to wait very long.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
You can do the barest minimum synopsis, which is just that, like, a family that's struggling, one of the members gets a job with a rich family, and then they sort of all try to get jobs there. So mm-hmm. that's pretty spoiler-free. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. Also, it was cool, while we were there, they renamed the South Lamar Alamo the Bong Joon-ho Cinema, which is really cool, but also, like, I think we joked about afterwards, I feel like you're not going to go to, like, the Alamo app, and it's not going to suddenly say Bong Joon-ho Cinema instead of South Lamar, but they made a whole deal about it, and he was very gracious, so it's cool.
Yeah, he looked happy.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then after that, we had another big premiere, which was Knives Out, the new movie from Rian Johnson, which is out in like 2 months.
It's out not soon enough because I want to see it again.
Yeah. So I mentioned.
Oh man, it was so good.
It's so fun.
Kat, we had one. This was like the one time we didn't all get into the screening, and then we tried to do a whole deal and get her into the screening, and it just didn't work out. And then she was not feeling good anyway, so it just double didn't work out. But the main reason I mentioned that is now it's going to be so hard to get through the next 2 months without being able to talk to her about this. especially just because the way certain things wrap up is so her sort of deal as well. So I know she's going to love it, but yeah. What do you guys think of it?
Knives Out was the perfect movie to close this festival with. It was really fun. It was high energy. It was engaging. It, like, checked all of the boxes while still delivering something that was really unique. Like, it's, you know, it's a whodunit murder mystery. We've all kind of seen the template for it, but Rian Johnson kind of took that template and, like, mixed it up a little bit. So the way it unfolds is not the way you expect it to unfold. And that kind of keeps the audience on their toes. And the cast is freaking phenomenal.
Yeah. So good. And it's also, it's hard to talk about the sort of twistiness or the way it subverts things without getting into spoilers, especially. But yeah, because it feels like anytime that, like, if there's a new whodunit by a good filmmaker, you're gonna be like, oh, they turn it all on their head. But he really does in this case, and it's like again, I thought the movie was doing one thing for a long time, and then it reaches a certain point, and it totally knocked me on my ass because I did not catch any of that at all. So then, yeah, it just ended up being a total surprise.
Yeah, I agree with Emily. Like, it really was a great way to close Fantastic Fest. It's a movie that really celebrates the movies. You know, it's like, it reminds you, like, oh, this is like, cause sometimes you just want to go to a movie and just have a blast with it. And just enjoy the ride it takes you on. And yeah, like, it's the whodunit. It's a movie that, for all intents and purposes, you've seen most of it before, but there's something special about seeing it done so flawlessly and then told in a new way. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, it's worth mentioning, like, the score is great. The cinematography, like, it's all shadowy and winding. And it's, you know, it's, all the little elements of the movie work really well, too. And yeah, I really loved, and then Daniel Craig's Benoit Blanc character is fucking so hilarious. Funny. His Southern drawl, and like the way that plays against, the other protagonist, Ana de Armas, like her sort of genuine sense of anxiousness and kind of concern for what's going on, like against his, like dry Southern drawl, just creates this great dynamic at the heart of the film. And actually sort of provides like a little bit of a window of empathy into this movie of otherwise like really loathsome people. So I thought it was just a really enjoyable experience that I had a blast with the ride it took me on. And I kind of like that there were times I thought I had it figured out and then it surprised me with some new directions and things like that. So yeah, I think this is one that people are going to just adore. I think this is going to show up in a lot of top tens this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like you mentioned, it's doing very familiar things. Like it's very much leaning into Agatha Christie to the point that we have, you know, an analog, for what's his name? The detective, you know,
Poirot.
Yes, Poirot, the person that, yeah, Benoit mm-hmm. Blanc is. And yet, like, between Blanc's sort of, like, the way he behaves, and then also just the writing in general, like, the movie has such a distinct voice, and it definitely feels like Rian Johnson's voice. And I think that alone sort of distinguishes it from a lot of similar types of movies. It feels very relevant in terms of some of the, like, background commentary, but none of that is like in your face. It doesn't feel like it's trying to be like a message movie, like you mentioned, Paul. Like it's just a really good time that actually also happens to, you know, tap into some things that are going on now without being heavy-handed about it at all. So it's really good, and like the cast is so stacked that there's like just people that you're like, oh yeah, this person's in this movie, and you forget about it because there's just too many other people.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love that, you know, sometimes when you have a movie that has such a big cast and such a dynamic cast, you sometimes feel like some of them get wasted in the role and we could have, you know, used more time with them. I never felt like that here. Like, we don't...
No.
It's like a two-hour movie. We can't spend 2 hours with every single character, but the time that everybody does get is really well used, so you don't feel cheated out of them being there.
Mm-hmm. Or, like... even when they don't do a ton, they feel like the right people to cast in the background. Like, I remembered after the fact, like, Ricky Lindholm is in the movie, but she doesn't have a ton in the to do. But, like, thinking about some of the other stuff she's in, one, you know, she's obviously a comedian, but thinking she had a series that I cannot think of about on Comedy Central that was about a bunch of, like, elite people in the, like, in old centuries. So, like, she fits right in sort of with these, like, privileged idiots who don't sort of know that they're privileged, you know that they're quite as big of idiots as they are. So, yeah, just really good casting across the board. Yeah, anything else you guys want to say about that one?
I need it to come out.
Yes.
So that we can all talk about it.
I'm excited to see it again.
Yeah, I joked about it then, but it's great to see Rian Johnson staple Noah Sagan playing the deputy so-and-so of this movie.
Oh my God. He is MVP of this movie. We will all be cheering for him.
It's so funny.
He is hilarious in this movie.
So, yes, that was a great way to end the fest. And so that is going to do it for Day 8 and Fantastic Fest itself. It's been a wild 8 days. We saw a ton of movies. Hopefully we did some of them justice. And hopefully you enjoyed the coverage. This was a little new, a little slapdash, a little more complicated than I ever expected, but it was fun. And so hopefully we'll get to do something like this again in the future. But yeah, before I go, let me just remind you where you can find all of the co-hosts on the internet.
She's not here, but Kat is at Bureau Kat, B-U-R-E-A-U-K-A-T. Paul is at Paul is Great 2000. And Emily is at Horrella Blog. Don't forget that Emily covered the festival for Daily Dead. So be sure to stop by there and check out all of her written reviews. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Nolan_McBride or the show's Twitter handle, which is at Dead Ringers Pod. You can find new episodes of Dead Ringers on iTunes, as well as Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and TuneIn. If you like the podcast, please make sure you're subscribed. Leave us a rating and consider leaving us a review in your podcast app of choice. That will definitely help us continue to grow the audience, get the word out, do fun things like have four of us at a film festival. So yeah, we would love to do more of that. You can also find new and old episodes at of the show at deadringerspodcast.com. You can also find all of Paul's coverage there. He wrote about pretty much every movie he saw, so you can catch up with all of that there. And yeah, we haven't officially decided on what the next pairing of our regular episodes will be, but stay tuned. We should be back in about 2 weeks or so to discuss a new pairing of horror movies. As always, if you want to keep up to date on our happenings, especially from Fantastic Fest stuff, keep an eye on Twitter. Thanks, as always, to Thomas Foster for our theme and Philip Yunt for our artwork and logo. And just want to send a huge thanks to everyone that is tuned in or continue to tune in or share the show with somebody. It means a lot to us. So thank you very much. As always, on behalf of my co-hosts, thanks for listening and stay spooky.